This is the Unseated Airwaves Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you from the unceded and ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples. In today's segment, we will be talking about Indigenous food sovereignty. In a series of pre-recorded interviews, I am joined by Dr. Lee Brown, Musqueam Elder Shane Point, and Julian Napoleon, student at UBC in the Faculty of Land and Food Systems. I am Mario Parent, On the Land correspondent, and this is Unceded Airwaves. For those new to Indigenous food sovereignty, I feel it's necessary to contextualize that the subject is a complex political discourse regarding global Indigenous rights. To help unpack and bring nuance to the subject, interviews today will cover Indigenous rights and practices as they pertain to the colonial Canadian state experience. Joining me today is Julian Napoleon to talk about Indigenous food sovereignty.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'll first start off by introducing myself.
Sure.
As Mario said, my name is Julian Napoleon, and I'm Dene-za and Cree from the Soto First Nation, which is in northeastern so-called British Columbia in the Peace River region. And I am a student at the University of British Columbia studying in the Faculty of Land and Food Systems. I grew up in a pretty traditional setting in my community, out on the land, learning traditional protocols, hunting, fishing, gathering plants and medicines, and also learning about our spirituality as well in the Dene-za context. And I currently am working with Don Morrison with the Working Group on Indigenous Food Sovereignty. I guess, what does food sovereignty mean for me? Being in the Faculty of Land and Food Systems, we talk a lot about this idea of food security, and you know, that's obviously the big idea is access to food. But in the academic dialogue around food security, there's other components such as cultural appropriateness and dignified access to food. But food security is something that could be provided for someone or for a community or a certain demographic of a community identified as those in need. But for me, when I think about food sovereignty and Indigenous food sovereignty, it's that ability to provide food security for yourself and your family. And for us, that means honoring our sacred relationship with the land, having a healthy enough land base to support that sacred relationship, and having the access to honor it and carry it out. So I can't speak for other Indigenous nations because we are such an incredibly diverse group of culturally unique peoples across the landscape of Turtle Island and indeed the world. And so from a Dene-za perspective, we're a land-based Indigenous culture, and for us, our diet really revolves around moose. And in the past, it was different animals, bison, caribou, and over time, due to the impacts of colonization and dramatic shifts to the landscape through industrialization and agriculture and settlement, that relationship has evolved over time. But in a contemporary context well, even historically, the moose has always been important, but in a contemporary context, that is the mainstay food of our people. So for us, it's not just having access to moose, but it's having the ability to go out on the land and hunt moose, and to be able to do that in a place where we're not having those negative impacts of industry in our faces, and you know, being able to be there in a good and healthy way. And these days, with what's happening up in my territory, it's getting very, very, very difficult to continue that relationship with the moose. So people are having a real hard time finding them now, and it's just gotten to a point where the land is suffering so bad, and because our culture is so intimately tied to the land, we are suffering too. And that's where we're at now. It's a multifaceted onslaught upon the land and the Dene Zaw people. Yeah, was that a response to what food sovereignty means?
Yeah, of course. And maybe to provide a little more context,
yes.
Dene Zaw territory is Treaty 8.
The Dene Zaw people are a historic territory. It was more or less bounded by the watershed of the Peace River from its source within the Rocky Mountains, flowing out eastward through northeastern so-called British Columbia, through what is known as Alberta, and then about halfway across Alberta, it would transition into some of our neighbors' territories. So it's pretty large area, but yet more or less bounded by that watershed. And what's happened is a real cumulative impact of a diversified resource extraction industry. But really what's at stake for us is everything. Is our home, and it's very much our food sovereignty. You know, it's all interconnected with, it's the same with other indigenous cultures. You can't extrapolate the Dene Zaw people from the land, from the animals and the fish and our food sovereignty. It's all the same thing. You know, you look at our spirituality, and it's so embedded within food sovereignty in the land. So it has to be considered, you know, for comprehensively to be accurate. So I guess what I'm getting at here, you know, is what we're up against and what we're fighting for is that ability to be able to continue carrying out the sacred relationships that define us as a unique culture within a larger community of cultures. And for me, that's really, really huge. And there's a disconnect between this understanding and the colonial governance understanding of what's happening.
That was Julie Napoleon, student at the Faculty of Land and Food Systems at UBC, speaking to Indigenous Food Sovereignty. For those of you just joining us, this is the Unceded Airwaves show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you from the unceded and ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples. Continuing on the subject of Indigenous food sovereignty is another pre-recorded interview. I am Mary Parent, On the Land correspondent, and joining me is Dr. Lee Brown and Musqueam elder Shane Point. Both Dr. Lee Brown and Shane Point are elders for the culturally relevant Urban Wellness Program, which engages Aboriginal youth with land-based and cultural practices at the UBC Farm. This interview was recorded during the graduation ceremony for the culturally relevant Urban Wellness Program. Congratulations to the youth for completing another successful year. If you listen closely, the youth can be heard celebrating in the background. Here's Dr. Lee Brown and Shane Point speaking to Indigenous Food Sovereignty.
Well, one of the things we want the youth to know while they're at the farm is that food, the vast majority of food that human beings in the entire world eat, come from native science. They come from native ancestry. The development of corn, beans, squash, and many other foods that originate in North and South America. Potatoes, peppers, 80% of the biomass of what was eaten in the earth today comes from the efforts of native ancestors to develop food over long periods of time. And we want the youth to know that this is an aspect of native science, that food as we know it today arises from the scientific efforts of the ancestors in the past to develop foods. We want them to know that many of the medicines that are used in Western medicine today come from us. We have As I said, over 60 medicinal plants in the garden that are medicines that the elders have shared with us. We want the youth to know that medicine, you know, a lot of what people consider medicine today originates with the knowledge of Aboriginal ancestors and Native ancestry. And that that too is our science. And that was conducted and explored. And we want them to have that. Another thing that Shane mentioned, a protocol relationship with plants, a protocol relationship with land, a respectful, spiritual, mature relationship with the land that we're living in, so that we will be a blessing to the land that we're in and not just taking from it all the time and, you know, moving humanity to the precipice of near destruction of global warming and all the other negative things that are happening worldwide in terms of the environment. I want to just begin on individual level, teaching people how to live in a way that our lives are a blessing to the earth and not a detraction from it. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of sovereignty and self-governance. And self-governance, there's two words. There's governance, which is a government governing process, but there's also self. Mm-hmm. And they really have sovereignty over self in relationship to food sovereignty. I think when a lot of people speak of food sovereignty, they mean, you know, having enough food to eat over a long period of time. But another aspect of food sovereignty is being able as a human being to choose those foods to eat which are healthy for you, and to not have that sovereignty taken away by mega advertising that convinces us to eat foods that are really not healthy for us, that are laced with chemicals, some of which are hardly even food at all. So a part of self-governance is getting control over the self. And a big part of that is getting control over what we're eating as well as what we're saying, you know. So our mouths are big parts of sovereignty. And so that individual aspect of sovereignty is something we look a lot at with the youth at the farm, to teach them, you know, to make wise choices for their health and their personal sovereignty as a being. Mm-hmm. To have national sovereignty, we have to have individual sovereignty and have strength and health. Health is a big part of a democratic sovereign government.
Just in recognition of protocol, a couple of weeks ago, placed a boulder. It's a marker. Boulder and a pole made by a young man going to school here at UBC, in his heart to do that, in his heart to create something beautiful for that place. The boulder, historically here, gender equity was of the utmost importance. So doctors here weren't only men, they were women as well. Those doctors had places within the territory that they utilized, or that, in a sense, belonged to them. So they'd maintain that source of medicine, but they'd have markers. So when somebody from outside of the territory, or even other women and men in the territory, they see the marker or the boulder or the pole, they know that they have to go and ask the individual who oversees that, sustains that over time. They have to go and ask. Of course, nobody ever says no, but they need to go and ask, can I pick medicine where your land is, where your plot is? Can we do that? We need that medicine. Mm-hmm. Yes. So protocol, human being to human being. And I want to echo what Brother Lee just said. It's not only that protocol between human beings, it's the protocol that each one of those doctors and herbalists has to the plant. They just don't go and harvest. They go with the utmost respect. They go with gift. They go with prayer. What people don't know now is one of the protocols to go and do that is you're up before the light comes to bath. Purify yourself. Pray. Pray, 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 pray. Bath, cold water, bath. Use the medicines, bath. So that when you go to harvest, you're going there clean. Not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually as well. You're going there clean. You're saying to the plant, to the medicine, Coast Salish language, slachen. When you go to slachen, you're going in your purest state. And you're also saying why I'm here. Why am I here? I'm here. I need your help. This is how I need your help. So protocol, very, very important, but it's not just human being to human being. It's human being to the water. They're going to go to the water this morning because they're going to get pure. They're telling the water, I'm here to get clean because I'm going for medicine. I'm going to go and harvest this. And it's the same with the hunters, the elk that used to be here. The hunter, go bath, pray, bath. I'm coming, but I got to be clean. So it's one of the essential things that anthropologists don't ask. No one asks outside of our families, how did you do that? Well, we did it with the purity, not only of heart and mind and spirit, all three, gotta get clean. Mm-hmm. We just don't go and get it. As well, there's a time. For example, my father, he'd use wild cherry bark. So he'd go and harvest it, boil it, drink it. It's medicine, slachen. The protocol handed to him by his father and his grandparents are when you go to harvest that, you just don't go at any time of the day. You get ready and you go, and it's the morning. So my father would go and get the cherry bark, and he'd wait. As soon as the sun comes up, soon as it breaks the horizon, the light that shines on the bark at that moment is what you harvest. Not below it, beside it, on the other side of the tree. It's where this first sunlight hits. Then you just take that. And very, very important to him when he's telling me, just don't go get it. This is what you have to do. It's what I've just said to you. It's you have to go with the utmost respect. One of his cousins came to see him and asked him about cherry bark. So he explains what it's used for, explains when you harvest it, cousin goes to get it in the middle of the day. In the middle of the day from anywhere on the tree, he brings it home, works on it, doesn't work for him. So he comes to my father and he says, geez, when it got cherry bark, didn't work. And so my dad asked him, he said, when did you go? And he said, well, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, went. Which side of the tree? My dad asks him. North side, south side, west side, which side? So he tells him, and my dad shakes his head, and he said, I told you. Got to get clean, got to pray, have to go there. It's when the very first light hits that spot. That's when you go.
In relation to non-Indigenous peoples who are interested in what Indigenous food sovereignty is and being able to participate with that, for them to come to you to ask you about these medicines, about the plants on the land here in Vancouver, in the Musqueam Territory, would it be okay for them to harvest these things if they went and observed Musqueam Protocol?
That's an interesting question. And it, we're lucky in the moment. So when Brother Lee Brown comes to Vancouver, when he comes to Musqueam territory, he says to me, I'm here. This is who I am. This is where I come from. This is my mom. This is my dad. I'm here. This is your territory. I want to know if I can be here. Wow. Wonderful. Wonderful. Following protocol. Yes, of course. I don't know plants. That wasn't my job. That wasn't what I was taught. But I do know that at Musqueam, we have elders who know. You need to go and ask. Need to seek them out and go and ask them. Ask them for permission. And ask them, the most important thing is when to harvest. And we just work with children on the crew program. And I'm an interloper with them. I'm there every now and again. But it's so beautiful to watch them because they're learning when to harvest. When do we harvest? This is when you harvest. This is when you pick this particular plant. Very, very important in terms of medicine is you not only need to know what it is, but when to harvest. Wow. If my dad didn't say, and I wasn't there with my uncle when he's telling him, it's when that first light hit, I wouldn't know. So vitally important.
Lee, did you have something more to say?
One, even though I've been involved with plants basically all my life, I still prefer to go with an elder when I'm gathering medicine. I think that, as Shane says, there's a lot to know about these plants. You can hurt yourself if you don't know what you're doing. Many of the plants have a plant that looks like it that is dangerous. So it's good to get not only permission, but the assistance of the elders to gather and to harvest. There's only a few plants that I really feel that I personally have permission and ability to gather on my own. So if someone is new to the territory, I think it's very important that they get permissions. I think it's very important that they realize that the knowledge that the elders have has in their own territories has built up over many, many, many generations. It's not something that you can learn about in a short amount of time. And that there's certain people that have that gift to work with plants, and you're much better off if they help you to get the plant. And as Shane said, there's some plants that, are good at the bottom of the mountain, but not good at the top. There's some plants that have that healing power in June, but it's not there in September. There's so much to know. And I encourage people to have respect to the land. I encourage people to go to the elders. But I also encourage people not to proceed on their own with a a relatively superficial knowledge, because it is dangerous. I mean, there's a large depth of knowledge here. And that respect for the territory that you're in has to be continuing, ongoing, as long as you're in that territory. So I think it's very, very, very important that people go to the elders for their own safety, And it takes many, many years, decades, and even a lifetime, to develop knowledge around plants.
I want to thank our guests, Dr. Lee Brown, Elder Shane Point, and Julian Napoleon, in the Niskot language, Toixinism.